gentlemen, podcasting since 2005, you're listening to Gamertag Radio with your hosts, podcaster Hall of Famer Danny Pena, the always opinionated Paris Lilly, and from outside of the norm, Peter Toledo. This is Gamertag Radio.
All right, welcome to a brand new episode here at Gamertag Radio, and this is your host, Danny Pena, and also joining me in person, so I don't know why he's here, but Paris Lilly, what are you doing, Paris?
I don't know why I'm here either, but your arrogance has been on full display as we record this.
Nah, I keep it very humble.
Trust me, I know what I'm doing.
All right, and also, we have here from What's Good Games, Rihanna Manuel Pena.
I was like, did you forget my name? Yeah. The hesitation.
I thought you were going to say something. That's why I'm like.
No, yeah. I'm here. Hi.
How you doing?
I'm also in person.
Yes, also in person.
We both live here.
Yes, this is our home.
This is our home.
Yeah. So.
And Paris is welcome anytime he wants.
Of course, anytime. As long as not like in the middle of the night. I have to wake up and I'm like, let me open the door. But it's okay.
That's okay. That's okay. What are we talking about today, Danny?
So today, we're going to be talking about our experience, hands-on impression of Redfall. We got to play the game, 2 hours? Hour and a half or
hour
so?
Hour and a half.
Hour and a half. And also, we have an interview with the creative director of the game. And that we're going to play that later on the show. But first, head over to GamerTagRadio.com. Listen to our past episodes. Also, you can find us any podcast app. Just search for Gamertag Radio. We're there. Follow us, subscribe, post a review. Please tell us your feedback about this episode and previous episodes, too. You could also hit us up, and this is how.
Send us your feedback or questions. Give us a call at 786-273-7GTR. Email us at fanmail@gamertagradio.com. Or leave a message on speakpipe.com/gamertagradio.
All right, so we're back here. Paris, Rihanna, we're going to talk about Redfall. First of all, I want to start off with very surprised how good this game is. Because I feel like there's been a lot of questions about the game ever since they announced the game last year. And I think the presentation, like videos that we got to see, people still had a lot of questions like, is it going to be like Left 4 Dead? Is it like Back for Blood? And now playing it, now I get it. Now I get why they were comparing with a game like Far Cry. But first of all, we play single player, not co-op, single player only for this event. I feel that this reminds me a little bit of Far Cry, but a different style, actually. You know, so your thoughts, Rihanna, with that. Do you agree, disagree?
I agree that it is not Back for Blood. This is not Left 4 Dead or any other Turtle Rock game. Mm-hmm. This is definitely an arcane game. And what I mean when I say that is that this is a very flexible storyline. Mm-hmm. It is an open world. There are many different ways that you can approach combat situations, exploration, puzzle solving, even traversal. Like, depending on which hero you play, which we can get into that in a mm-hmm. second, mm-hmm. there are even several different ways you can enter a room or a building in order to clear out a nest, find an objective, so mm-hmm. on and so forth. And it really does tailor itself to whatever play style suits you. And I do really like that flexibility. There are a couple of things that it makes more sense for, let's say, a character that has more height advantage versus a character that's more of a stealth character. But any problem is solvable with any type of playstyle, and I think that's really cool.
Yeah, and your thoughts, Paris?
Yeah, I mean, just to echo what she was saying, I was pleasantly surprised by the game. I mean, you know, we've obviously had a lot of speculation on what it was going to be. Clearly, there were a lot of Left 4 Dead comparisons, Back 4 Blood comparisons to what this was going to be. It's not what it is. Mm-hmm. It is actually more along the lines of what Arkane did say. This is more Far Cry than anything, mm-hmm. but with that Arkane DNA of Prey and Dishonored mixed in. I had a great time. I really did going in the open world, so much so that I kind of forgot to do the main mission at one point where I'm doing a lot of side activities, you know, just things that are actively happening in the open world. And then when I did focus on the main mission, the puzzle solving aspects of it, I thought were good. The encounter that was, you know, that you had, I had to actually think, slow down about what I was going to do before I just rushed in the door, you know, trying to take, you know, tackle the objective. I actually completed the mission, unlike you, Danny.
So, I almost completed the main mission.
Almost completed it.
You did the side quest?
Yes, I did.
What, why are you giving me that look?
I did a nest as well.
Yeah, I did multiple nests.
I also unlocked another safe house. Did you do that? Yeah, I did all that. And I completed the mission.
Because, first of all, people that don't know, it's very helpful for you to discover a safe house, because that will help you to fast travel just in case you die. You go from the main base to the safe house, you could just move around, everything like that. So, but the good thing about the safe house, not only fast travel, but there's also ammo there. There might be a certain amount of first aid kits there. If it runs out, then you have to go to the main base because there's unlimited amount of that.
One thing I just want to interject with, I give it to Rihanna, is you know, Arcane Austin talked about how, you know, like when you look at the map, you're going to go, the map doesn't seem that big. But because you're on foot, there's no vehicles or anything like that. Being on foot, it's actually pretty big. It's a pretty big open world to explore, discover. You go in the houses, there's a lot of, it's fully furnished. Like, you can tell there's a lot of time and effort put into the level design of this. So despite the map me looking small at first glance, it's very compact with a lot of different things to do and discover while you're in it.
Yeah.
Yeah. And speaking of lots of things to do and discover at the safe houses that we're talking about, I unlocked two in my playthrough. Mm-hmm. There are additional missions that you can pick up there. And what I thought was really interesting is that once you initiate one, you have to complete it before you initiate another. So folks who like to play these games where, like, you know, Far Cry, what have you, where you stack a bunch of side quests and, you know, knock them all off at the same time. I also do this with Disney Dreamlight Valley, where I collect all of the quests from the NPCs and then do them all at the same time. You can't. It meters you so that you do have to explore the world at a certain pace, because while this is open world, there is a storyline and they want you to experience that through your playtime. Mm-hmm. So I think it's a really interesting way to slow you down and force you to visit certain areas or have certain encounters that aren't necessarily on rails or scripted, but they do control it that way. And I think that's really creative and something I found really surprising.
What was, like, the first thing you guys tried out in the game? Was it the side quest? Was it just explore? I was just exploring and just trying to figure out more about, like, the map area. And I know there's also, what's the name of the normal characters? Is not the vampires.
Cultist. So those are humans who are devoted to serving the vampires.
Yes. Yeah. So they're very easy to fight. Kill. The vampires are the ones that are very, very challenging. There's one that I bump into a couple times. He has like a blue shield. Those were really challenging for me. But what was, like, the first thing you guys tried out for you? Was it?
So the first thing I did, because I played as the character Jacob, which I think we all did, I immediately wanted to know how this auto-aim sniper final worked. And so I was sitting next to one of the devs, Josh, and he said, well, why don't you just go find some people to kill? And I was like, bet. And then I ran straight forward until I found a group of cultists and I activated my final and I zoom in, shot. And it felt so powerful.
Yeah.
And it was so much fun that I immediately just wanted to find more enemies. And I did that for a while. Mm-hmm. One of the other first things that I encountered was the red mist that you see in the game. Mm-hmm. And there are, without giving spoilers or solutions to puzzles away, there are certain weapons that work against them and certain ones that don't. So I found one that did work against them and worked on, like, clearing out the mist. Like, that was my next, like, mini mission that I gave myself. Mm-hmm. It's not something that's in the game, like, clear out the red mist enemies, but I found myself creating these mini challenges because they were so so fun and so compelling. So I did that for a while before I even did the first safe house mission, because mm-hmm. it was just so fun to traverse the world and figure out how it works.
Yeah, there's also abandoned vehicles that you could bump into in there. You could also just like find random stuff like weapons or items that will help you gain XP. So I was doing a lot of that too. So what about you, Paris? Go ahead.
Yeah, I mean, very similar. I just literally just walked out of the firehouse and just started getting into random encounters and just discovering things. And then that's when I came upon one of the vampire nests, which to describe that, it's almost like a door that you'll see in like just a random place, like a glowing door. You go in there and it transports you like into like literally another world mm-hmm. that you're in. And that's where the vampires, they go to sleep and they regenerate and do all that stuff. So you go through that whole thing, you get towards the end where there's like the vampire heart, I guess is the best way to describe it. And you have to disconnect that, you destroy the heart. There's a vampire that spawns out of that. You have to take out that vampire, and then there's loot that you'll get, you know, because of doing that. And these are obviously things that you can do in the open world, which are optional. Again, you don't have to do it.
Oh, and the nest also buffs the vampires in a certain circumference. Mm-hmm. So if you attempt to do missions or even just like finding your own fun around a vampire nest, mm-hmm. it has this dome of blue light that you can clearly see on your map and feel it as you're walking around the world. Those vampires be really hard to kill. So it's almost a must to take out the nest if you want to be able to complete missions or things around that area. Or if you like giving yourself a challenge, you can leave it up.
Yeah, and one thing you forgot to mention too, there's also a time limit for you. You have to escape. I think that's like 60 seconds or so. But what I was doing is once I destroyed the nest, I was going to like the different, like it was like a red crystal that you,
right.
you punch it. And then mm-hmm. there's items. They might be ammo, guns, first aid kit. This is pretty random in there. So I did all of that. I did, I think there was actually three around that area. So, but yeah, it was fun. Was that the one where there was like a theater?
Yes. That was the one I went
into. So how was that for you? The theater, could I turn off the special camera?
Yeah, I did too.
You did too? Okay, yeah. I did the same thing. That was pretty cool. Yeah. Pretty cool, yeah. So your thoughts about like the sound, the music?
I thought the audio reproduction, I thought the visuals were good. I mean, mm-hmm. for an open world game, I mean, everything was solid. I didn't have any complaints from that. And again, full disclosure, it was a preview build. Might have been a couple bugs here or there, but yeah. You know, not that big of a deal. Mm-hmm. I would say from a weapon standpoint, the guns felt good. It felt good to use the weapons. They had the shotgun had a punch to it when you're using it, which felt really good. You know, we'll talk about this more in the interview, but you know, the weapons, you know, they spawn out in the world. You can't upgrade them. So the roles that they have are the ones that you get. So that's obviously going to encourage you, you know, to want to go out and discover more things and get more loot drops and just find the weapons that you want. And, you know, something that you had pointed out, Danny, which is cool. You can have three weapons equipped at any time, but in your backpack, what was it? How
like
many?
Four, I think it's like 40.
Yeah. You get to hold a large amount of weapons at any given mm-hmm. time, which is good. So it allows you to do experimentation, see the ones that you like, that you don't like. Obviously, you're going to be leveling up along the way. So mm-hmm.
Yeah, I got to level 8 because the demo that we played, we started level 7. So we upgraded our skills. We had skill points in there too. And also about the weapons, there's a like typical like Destiny. There's the green, like there's rare weapons and there's like the legendary weapons. And the only difference is because there was some where I had a one that was blue and the other one was also was that yellow for legendary, but the blue one had more damage. And the only difference was at the bottom it might say it reload faster. Like there's certain stuff that you could do in that weapon that the other weapons don't, you know what I'm saying? So yeah, go ahead.
Yeah, and really quick, because we haven't talked about the heroes yet, I noticed in the skill tree, there are some skills that are tailored to co-op play. Mm-hmm. And we did talk about how co-op is not going to be match made. It has to be preset, so you have to invite a friend in order to play with more than one person. And you can stack different heroes together. So one of the skill tree points that I accidentally specced into, because again, we were playing solo, was that anytime I send out a raven and they mark somebody, that they heal our team or something like that. It was either sending out the Raven as Jacob or using my final sniper would heal a team. And it's interesting because there are lots of different ways that you can formulate like co-op builds specifically, and for this game to not be heavy on the RPG mechanics, I think that was really cool that they at least gave you a little bit of that. So the four people we have, well, again, we all played as Jacob, and I'm saying his name right, Jacob. Yes, yeah. Jacob, who is a sniper, stealth. He has a Raven that can go scan, and once you skill point it up, maybe even damage enemies for you. And then the final is this super sniper rifle, which is really cool. We have Layla, who is more of a traversal hero, who can, the big one is the elevator that can let people sort of bounce up and reach high vantage points. And then finally, you can summon a quote unquote vampire ex-boyfriend to come and help you fight. So you can summon a friend. They have Devinder, who can teleport, like sort of like a Loba bracelet. So you can shoot out a projectile and then teleport.
That's the one that's from the UK?
Yes.
Yes, yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and his backstory is really funny because I thought of Danny. He was in town because he was doing a book signing, and everything went down. And his final does a black light where it blinds humans and freezes vampires, which is going to be huge, especially when you get into horde situations, which I absolutely found myself in. Mm-hmm. And then finally, Remy De La Rosa, that's the person that you were really interested in, Danny, who's a robotics expert. She has a robot sidekick that can either be used to pull aggro from enemies, you can stick a bomb on it, it can eventually heal the party. But the name of it was really cute, and I forget what it was.
But he won't.
Yeah. So it's really cute because its behavior, obviously, is part of what inspired the name, and it was really sweet because you had a moment in the interview where you talked about that.
Well, you guys listened to the interview. That was pretty cool.
It was very cool.
That character is actually Puerto Rican.
Right.
Puerto Rican, yeah.
So what I think is really neat and that we confirm with the devs is that you can have a team of all Remy's or all Layla's or mix it up however you want. There's a lot of room to play around with like co-op functionality. Like for instance, I think the skill point for Jacob was actually it heals you when you revive a teammate. So let's say it's all Jacobs and you're just reviving each other. Well, then you're basically unstoppable and you can start tanking even though you're a stealth character. Mm-hmm. And I thought that was really cool because there are some ways that you can play around with the builds. Again, not a traditional RPG, but there's some fun ways to mix and match there.
You know, one thing I just thought about now, like when you play a game like Left 4 Dead and like, you know, typical games like that is multiplayer. It feels like when you play a single player, it feels like you're missing out the full experience. You need to have a group of friends to actually play, right? With this one, I don't know, maybe you probably disagree with me or not, but I wasn't feeling like, oh, I need a squad to feel the full experience. You could still have a good time playing single player. It might be a little bit challenging on certain things. And the only experience I'm going to miss out is the dialogue between the characters when you have everybody in there. But you guys felt that way? You felt like it needed to be co-op?
I didn't feel that it needed to be co-op, but I definitely saw the opportunities there if it was co-op, if that makes sense. I think they struck a good balance there. So you can have an enjoyable experience if you're playing solo, but it'll be even more enhanced, obviously, bringing your friends in and doing that. And, you know, the point of, you know, chaining different abilities together. And, you know, not to mention, you know, the difficulty will scale if you go into a co-op game. So you're obviously going to have more enemies, things like that. So that gives you more of a challenge. Not to mention, even just on a basic level, there's difficulty levels to play on as well. So you can obviously ramp it up to the hardest difficulty that you want, bring in three friends and, you know, just go nuts from there. So I think it was good.
What was your weapons of choice? For me, it was the shotgun. The only thing is I only could shoot twice and then have to reload. It takes a little time, you know, but what I was doing is when I was attacking a vampire and I had to reload and they're coming straight at me, I'll go and use this special ability where he disappeared, like a camo version, and then they can't find me. It will take me a little time to like reload and get ready and start attacking again. What about you guys?
I mean, I was using a combination of a shotgun and the assault rifle mostly. There was the, I don't know what the hell you call it. There was the heavy weapon.
The laser?
No, it wasn't a laser. It was almost like a... like a spear or something. I don't know how to describe it, but it was like a one shot thing. But it was a heavy weapon. I'm blanking on what it was, but I didn't use it a lot. I didn't feel I needed to use it that much. Like I said, I was kind of just back and forth with the shotgun and the assault rifle. Mm-hmm. And then they had the stakes on the end. So when you get a vent, cause, oh, that was the one thing. You can't just shoot a vampire and he dies. He'll get low health and be stunned. Then you got to stake him, or you got to set him on fire and burn him up.
Yeah.
Those are two ways to kill him. Mm-hmm. There's probably more, but those are two that I found.
Yeah. What about you, Ree?
I quickly found my optimal loadout was the assault rifle with the stake bayonet, a handgun, and a UV blaster. And I use UV blaster to either stun or kill a lot of vampires, because UV will set them ablaze. But I also really enjoyed using the handgun to get either the enemies, you know, the cultists, just straight up kill them. Mm-hmm. Or to stun the vampire and then quickly swap to my assault rifle to bayonet stun them. And I do agree that the reload time was a little frustrating. But keep in mind, these were, I think, blue weapons. So that there's probably other ones that will be faster and a quicker reload and things like that. The assault rifle felt really good. The recoil on all the three different weapons I used felt very different, and they felt unique. Mm-hmm. And eventually, once I took out a mini boss after a safe house mission, I got off of their dead body a special weapon that had a name. These are ones that are unique to those bosses. I believe they said that they always drop for the same bosses, so you can go hunt them down, sort of like exotics in any other kind of game. And it was really cool because it was like covered. It was a shotgun covered in barnacles, like it was pulled straight out of the ocean. Mm-hmm. And from there, I started using that shotgun just because it looks so cool. And what I really love about this, it is a first person game, but you really do feel like you can see the weapons in action really well. Mm-hmm. And they all have a really unique identity, and I enjoyed using all of them.
You know, I'm a type of person that don't like using snipers during first person shooters. I feel really good playing with a sniper. I feel like I was a pro using it.
Did you use the exotic one?
It was a blue one that I used. Yeah. But I was using that a lot because it was an area where it was a lot of enemies. So it's good to shoot from far away. There was also some enemies we haven't talked about where they could track you down. So if they look at you and you go to like their, I think it's like a beam or something, it will alert everybody else in that area. Hey, there's an enemy here.
They never got me. I always killed them before they
did. I did by mistake. I've discovered them at a different location at a house, and I didn't know. I was just walking by. I thought it was just a light, and it was actually one of the enemies just looking at me. And by mistake, he called everybody, and I got killed. That was like my first time I actually died there. So, but I never felt like a struggle to continue the game. What I was doing is discovering safe houses, and then if I die, I just go move around and everything like that. But it felt like easy, and once I go back, okay, I know what to do this time. Was it frustrating for you guys in certain areas or not really?
I had one that was really scary. Like wait, I was so clenched. So one of the mechanics that you have eventually in the game is if you kill enough special vampires, there is a sort of wanted meter, right, from GTA, where if your meter fills up to a certain point after killing several special vampires, it'll say the vampire gods are watching.
Yes.
And it's very frightening and feels very ominous, like, oh no, they're looking at me. And at a certain point, you'll see a storm coming, a clouds of red lightning strike down, and then all of a sudden you're being hunted by the Rook. Mm-hmm. And the Rook is one scary mf'er, and he came at me, and I immediately panicked and I just start running. Learn quickly, you cannot outrun the Rook. And so what I did was I got a few assault rifle shots in him, and then I realized, oh yeah, I have a final. I had my full meter up because your two special abilities are cooldowns. Mm-hmm. Your final ability is on a meter that you get mana, some kind of mana for whenever you do kill a special vampire. So I had my final because I was killing all these special vamps. And so I just pulled the two buttons and then fired it off and just like unloaded my special onto this Rook and actually took him out. And that was really, really cool because I went very quickly from being terrified to feeling super, super powerful. Yeah. And I had a lot of moments like that in this playthrough.
Yeah. And a lot of people don't know about this, about Ree. she's not really a fan of playing horror games. So I'm very proud of you that you had a great time, you know, playing this. So I can't wait to play with us, you know, together. So go ahead.
Why you always put people business out there?
No,
why
don't you let them tell it? She publicly talk about this. She doesn't like horror games. You know?
I'm here live. I want to say it to your face because you do it to me a lot. You always put my business out there.
Hey, if you tweet about it, it's public knowledge. Yeah. So anything else, Paris? Anything else from
the game? I mean, it's just overall, like I said, I came in to this, not that I had low expectations. I don't think that's the right way to phrase it. Mm-hmm. But it exceeded what I thought it was going to be, mm-hmm. which is good, obviously. I do think there's a lot of potential with what they've crafted here with this open world of Redfall and just the possibilities of what the co-op's going to look like, playing with your friends, the different combinations with the abilities, the weapon drops, just the discovery of their, oh, and that was the other thing we had asked the creative director. We kind of had like a mini Q&A before we jumped in and played. And, you know, the open world activities are dynamic. They are procedural. They're not going to be static. I mean, mission things that you're doing in the main story are going to be consistent, but the open world activities will change. The vampire nest, as an example, will not always be the same when you go into them. So that's good. That's good for replayability, going in and jumping in and playing and doing that. And obviously, eventually, going into the point when getting leveled up to the point where you can play at the highest difficulty. And I just can't imagine how tough that's going to be playing that. So I'm excited to see more for sure. I mean, you know, it's coming pretty quick, May 2nd. So we don't have too much longer to wait, but getting a sneak peek of it was good. It was real good.
Yeah. And I have to mention this, like you could tell the team, they're confident. They're really, really confident. They're having multiple events across the country because I know we've seen creators saying, oh, we're going to the event East Coast, another one.
Yeah, and they talked about they're doing one in Europe.
Yeah, and also in Europe too. So not only that, but like you could tell like they're very excited. They were behind us just checking out to see like our reaction. And I learned a lot by just we had one of the community managers or someone from the dev team also just giving us tips, things we do. Like it felt good playing it. Again, I really got surprised. Cause at first I was like, I just had a lot of questions about the game, but playing it, I think they got a pretty good game, especially that's coming up for Game Pass. And one thing that it did mention, this is crossplay, which is great. So if you have friends that don't have the Xbox console, they could play on PC too. So very excited for the final version to come out a couple weeks in May?
In May, May 2nd, right?
May 2nd, yeah.
Really quickly before we close this out, I do want to give a shout out to the music because it is really good. Yeah. And a lot of people will see this in a lot of the trailers, right? It's got a very cool, you know, like heavy bass, you know, boppy vibe to it. Mm-hmm. I would say there are moments in the game when I was, you know, playing through enemy encounters that I found myself bopping my head. and I had the game on easy mode because that's what I do when I play a game for the first time. But I thought it was really cool because I wasn't so distracted by it, but it just was really good background. Mm-hmm. And it was a lot of fun. I really like the vibe of this world. And
I really do too.
It does a great job of mm-hmm. telegraphing what's going on. So like I said before, you can see the buffed area around a vampire nest. You know when there's a vampire tracking you and chasing you. Like, you know if there are enemies who can hear or see you. Like, you understand what's happening. So I would say it's less horror and more, you know, just typical open world.
Yeah, I think the fans are going to enjoy this once they play like the final version. I can't wait for the reaction for everybody else. Wow, I hit myself. Wow, that was pretty bad. All right, so we're going to go. Sorry, yeah, we're doing this live. Right now, we're going to go and play the interview that we recorded with the creative director. And once we come back, we're going to final thoughts. And we'll be right back after this.
You're listening to Gamertag Radio.
Hey everybody, my name is Ricardo Baer. I'm the creative director at Arkane Studios Austin and co-creative director on Redfall.
Awesome, awesome. Yeah, I'm here with Paris. I was having this conversation with Paris. Last interview was January 2020, so You're the first one ever since we started going back to events, yeah, man, in-person events. Yeah, so we had a great time playing Redfall. Tell us a little bit about the demo that we played today.
So today, we put you guys a couple hours into the game, mm-hmm. playing the mission called the House of Echoes, mm-hmm. which is a mission centered around this vampire god named the Hollow Man. He's this super powerful entity who's been oppressing and dominating the area. And so you found out that he used to be this guy named Peter Addison. And so you went to his spooky ass mansion to see if you could figure out how did he become the Hollow Man? What do we got to do to take him down?
So it's interesting. Obviously, Redfall got announced a couple years ago, and you know we're pretty close to the launch at this point. So during that time, there's been a lot of comparisons mm-hmm. to other certain games.
Yeah.
And finally getting a chance to get hands-on with it and go through it, I get it now.
Yeah.
I get, because I think at one point it was mentioned this is more Far Cry than Left mm-hmm. 4 Dead, and I totally get that comparison because going into the open world, I forgot to do the main mission. I was just exploring and, you know, taking on random events and did a mm-hmm. side mission, you know, opened a safe house, did, you know, various things like that before I actually did the main mission. So kind of talk about that philosophy of this open world concept that is Redfall.
Yeah, you know, it's totally understandable because people always, when you're making something new, people understand things in terms of things that they already understand, right? They have to understand by analogy. And so if you see four characters, you latch onto that, or, you know, you see a certain thing in a trailer. But it is definitely an open world game. In fact, that's the new thing that we're doing on top of, you know, every time we make a game, we try to do something a little bit different. Prey is not exactly the same as Dishonored.
Right.
You know, Dishonored is very stealth heavy. Prey is less stealth heavy, but it's like, you know, the mission structure is totally different, and it's like a small open world, has tons of physics in it. So for Redfall, we were like, let's take our arcane values, you know, where players are free to experiment, free to roam, but let's set it in an open world. And I think you kind of have to feel it to realize, yeah. No, I really can just go anywhere, yeah. And do things in any order. and it was a huge challenge for the team because we put so much work into like a single room. You know, we're like, we want you to walk into this room and like, you know, see the way things are arranged, see the bodies on the floor, and be able to tell a little story. And so we had to take that philosophy and like, how do we fill an entire open world with that? You know, so there are some trade-offs, obviously.
Mm. I really enjoy the puzzles. Mm-hmm. I did the one with the dollhouse.
Yeah.
That was pretty interesting,
oh,
too.
Cool.
Yeah, I had a good time in that. One question I do have is the decision of this being a... Because we play single player.
Yeah.
The decision of being online for this, online only.
Like co-op?
Yeah. Well, I'm saying like when you play single player, you still have to be online, right?
Yeah,
so
yeah.
Why the decision of that? And also tell us a little bit about like how crossplay is going to work for those that...
Okay.
You know,
there's a couple of things that being online gives us that are, it's important to us. Like it lets us like track some telemetry stuff so that we can, since it's an online game, we want to be able to update the game with like feedback from players. Mm-hmm. So we can track things like, hey, everybody is dying here at this spot. We need to adjust something here. Mm-hmm. However, that being said, we have heard, you know, the feedback and we're going to try to do something about that as soon as possible.
Oh, cool. And but, crossplay.
Yeah. And crossplay is fully functional. You can play crossplay PC, Xbox, drop in and drop out of co-op sessions.
Oh, that's fantastic. So going back to the actual demo that we played, you know, because like you mentioned, we got dropped a couple hours already in, so you already loaded us up with weapons, things like that. But my main curiosity coming into this, and I saw a little bit of it as I was playing, is the loot system.
Yeah.
As far as when you are tackling some of these side missions, the main missions, and you're getting these loot drops, it looked like there was almost a common, rare, legendary, epic type of structure to mm-hmm. the weapon. So talk about that. What, like, as we're going through playing the game, what is that? Are these loot drops, are there specific loot drops? Is this dynamic? How does that work?
So it's a mix. So our game, because it's set in the modern day, you know, small town in America, it's got some weapons that you would expect in a shooter, like shotguns and pistols and all that stuff. And then it's got a special class of weapons that are like just people have jury-rigged together in order to fight the vampires, like UV beams and stake launchers and things like that. But then those all exist in a system of like tiers, which, you know, if you've played a modern you know, looter shooter type game, which this isn't exactly like, but you know, it shares some of that stuff. So you'll recognize like, oh, this is a rarer weapon. It has traits on it that the other one doesn't have, so I should upgrade. On top of that, there are also there's a category called Unrivaled, which are like unique weapons. So most of it's random, like you know, the game just rolls the dice whenever you like, you know, a monster drops some loot or something like that. But some of it is a very specific, like there are unique named weapons that you can find only one version of. And then we have special categories of gear. I don't know if you found any, but we have these things called Blood Remnants.
I did.
So it's like it's got psychic vampire blood, you know, connected to it somehow. And those, you can find them out in the open world, but it's super rare. The main place to find them is inside the vampire nests, inside the hearts. And so those upgrade like your health and they add cool traits. And then we have unique versions of those too that the vampire gods drop, but you guys didn't get to a vampire god yet.
Close.
So just the one follow-up to that, because I just want to be crystal clear. Are we able to upgrade any of the weapons that drop, or is it specific? Whatever it rolls, that's what you get.
Yeah, it rolls, that's what you get.
Okay.
A little bit closer. Oh, I'm sorry. Yeah,
it's okay. tell us a little bit about the characters. Is this because I know we started ahead from the introduction, right? So. Yeah. Is there a story like how they got to me? Were they friends from the beginning? Or
In brief, none of them know each other. They are all on the island for different reasons, right? Mm-hmm. So just to give you an example, Jacob, you may have run into some of these dudes, but there's a military group called Bellwether that's there for nefarious, mysterious reasons. Mm-hmm. Jacob was a part of Bellwether. But he left the unit. He was deployed to Redfall as part of their troop, and then some shit happened to him. And he's like not with them anymore. Mm-hmm. And so each character has their own like different reason for being on the island. Like Layla already lived there; she was a student there. You know, Remy was helping Coast Guard people train like survival and rescue stuff when all the bad stuff happened. Mm-hmm. Devinder was there at like a book signing. And so if you play each character and you sort of dig into their backstory, you can find that stuff out.
Yeah, and what's Remy's companion?
Oh, Bribon.
Bribon. So, for those that don't know, Bribon means show off. Is he a show off? Like,
it's kind of it means show off and like rascal. You know, like you little rascal kind of a thing.
Oh yeah, just want to mention that real quick.
Eres Puerto Rican?
Yeah, Dominicano.
Dominicano. Okay, yeah. Good.
So we kind of already had this conversation offline earlier in the presentation, but I want to bring it up here as well. So we obviously have the four distinct characters, and they have the four distinct abilities as well. So as I'm playing, I realize two of the abilities are on a cooldown, but then there's the third ability that is not. So if you can kind of go into the different abilities and why you went with that structure of two cooldowns and one with the special.
Okay. Yeah. So each hero, as you probably discovered, you know, the weapons are all universal. Anybody can use any weapon that you find, but each hero has a unique power set. So that's pretty cool reason to either play co-op with your buddies with different heroes or play the game again as a different hero because it changes the experience. But every hero has three powers. The first two are on cooldowns and partially that's because we wanted you to be able to just like use them frequently,
right,
you know, without having to worry about resources. And then every hero has an ultimate that's supposed to be like a big, like, you know, dropping a nuke, you know, really changing. Our goal was to make it feel like I almost died, but at the last minute I used this ability, you know, and it saved the day. You know, we want those like dramatic spikes. And so the third ability uses a resource called Psychic Residue, which sometimes it's sort of like mana. You can find it around the cultists who worship the vampire gods. They carry it with them sometimes because they're like, you know, worshiping the vampires. Mm-hmm. But also anything that is a vampire, when you kill it, will drop Psychic Residue.
Yeah, and when you change characters, when you're playing, the dialogue, does it change? The story changes or is it still the same?
The story, the main story doesn't change. That's the same for each hero. Mm-hmm. But the dialogue does change. Like each hero has different reactions to things, you know, because like just to give you a very specific example, like if you found the theater, like if you're playing as Layla, Layla's going to be like, oh, I love this theater. I went to the whatever show here, you know. Mm-hmm. Jake is going to be like, I hate movies or whatever. You know, he has got a different reaction to the situation.
Yeah.
So I have to ask this, and this deals more with co-op and progression. So today we played single player, so we did not do co-op, but people will kill me if I don't ask this directly because I've kind of complained about this over the last couple of years, so I just want to be definitive on the answer. So when we're playing co-op, does our progression. So let's say the four of us we're in a match and I'm picking up weapons and things like that.
Yeah.
I then drop out of that co-op match. Mm-hmm. Do I keep that progression that I have?
You keep it. So I'll explain.
Yes.
it's the only thing that you don't keep is story progression.
Okay.
The person who hosted the game, they keep story progression. Everybody keeps like their loot, their level up progress, all that stuff is the same. But story is just for the host player. But what we found is most people play the game, we don't do random matches, like we just support playing with friends. So most people play the game through with their friends anyways, so hopefully it doesn't impact them. You know, we wanted each player to like have their version of the story, because I don't know if you saw the mission table, but you can play, there are optional missions, but then even the main missions, you can play them in different order.
Right.
So like, if we tried to make it like copy over onto the other player, it might invalidate the other person's experience, if that makes sense.
You know? Yeah. So just one follow up to that. Yeah. Just again, when we talk about story progression and everything. So let's say, and I'm just pulling a random number out, I'm a level 10.
Yeah.
My buddy comes in at a level 2.
Yeah.
How does the game scale for that? Is the level 2 guy on the struggle bus? So yes. He's on the struggle bus. Okay.
Yeah. But so this was an interesting debate internally, because some people will scale the game and scale progression, but what we decided is like to basically make it so that like you get what you get, but the upside is the level 2 player will level up really fast.
Got it.
Mm-hmm. Does that make sense?
Yeah. I know a lot of people are probably going to be asking like, why vampires? Why not you know, zombies or other type of enemies? Yeah. Why? What was the inspiration of coming up with this concept of vampires
for you guys? Well, I mean, vampires are cool as hell, and I think the main thing is like they're different than zombies or werewolves or whatever. And monsters are, they're always like they're metaphors for things, right? And vampires are, they've always been popular, like, you know, since, you know, Bram Stoker or whatever. But the cool thing is that people reinvent them, right? So they have different rules, they have different origins, you know. Mm-hmm. And so that's the main reason we picked him. I think that there's perennially, like, universally popular creature, but you get to do your own spin on it each time you use them.
Yeah, because people are probably going to be asking, hey, it's daytime. There's still vampires here. And, technically, they're not.
Yep.
They become weak, right? It hurts them if they go outside, right? But not in the game. The game is a little bit different.
The game's a little different because there is a vampire called the Black Sun, which if you'd started at the beginning of the game, you would have met her. But she has basically put like a black disc over the sun, over the island, almost like an umbrella to shade the island. And so that means the vampires can come at you at any point, which is why ultraviolet light, like establishing little strongholds with ultraviolet light, is super important.
So kind of my final question is more of just a personal one for you, as being one of the creative directors on the game. And you had mentioned earlier, it's been like 5+ years that you've been working on this. Now that, I don't know if we're the first, but we're obviously one of the first people outside of Arcane to be able to get
first
hands
people
on.
I'm talking to.
That's right. That's what I mean. So, I mean, how do you feel? I mean, how do you feel seeing us out there playing the game, man. And just, you know, what's going through your head?
You know, so with every development cycle, I feel, and I know the team feels this, like, both terror and excitement. Right. Because when you put something creative out to the world to finally see, you know, you're just, like, anxious about how people are going to react. At the same time, I feel tremendous relief also that, like, oh my God, we're finally letting people see this, because the development for this game has had a longer and harder road than other development cycles, just because of all the adversity that we've had to overcome, you know, like with the pandemic, with working from home. And those of us in Texas, we had to go through a snowpocalypse where Texas was shut down for like a month, you know?
So
it's been a long road.
Yeah. In the studio, like, which character is like the ones that everybody uses the most, and do you have a prediction which one the community is going to be using once it comes?
Layla? I know, I like it. You've got the purple going on. So here's, this is funny, because I would have said Layla too, and I think Layla is like the most popular, like, socially, like, people think she's super cool. She's a cool ass character. But I think people pick Jacob the most often because of his powers. Like, he's like, oh, he can snipe people and he can hide. So I think that feels like I'm going to do, at least when they play the first time, because that feels like the choice is going to keep them alive the easiest, you know? Mm-hmm. My favorite is Remy, because I like that she has bribón.
That's why I want to play Remy,
too. Española un poquito, ¿sabes?
Sabe un poco de español. There you go. I just want to say, man, I had a great time playing this. I can't wait for the full version once it comes out. And thanks for the opportunity for for letting us play the game and talk to you too. And it's been a great time.
I'm psyched that you guys got to play it. So yeah, thanks for being here.
Thanks a lot, man.
Thank you.
This is Gamertag Radio.
All right, so we're back here. That was a great conversation with the creative director over there. And
shout out to Ricardo.
Shout out to Ricardo. That was a great conversation. And Paris, one of the questions that I was surprised was I asked him about why they decided to make this like online only. But one of the things that he answered, which I was very surprised about, that they might make some changes that potentially you could play this offline. It sounded like that, right? Were you surprised about that?
Yeah, I was very surprised to see that transparency that, you know, they're at least looking at it to see if it's possible to have an offline mode for it, which obviously will make a lot of people happy. Mm-hmm. And obviously I asked about, you know, just the co-op progression and how that's going to work. And, you know, I get it. So story progression won't carry over, but you're leveling up, the weapon drops, all that. You're going to keep all that kind of stuff. So I think that's a fair enough compromise.
Yeah. And another thing too, I'm okay with just inviting friends to my session because sometimes playing with randoms, it could be a okay experience or
especially
pretty
in a
bad
game
experience.
Like this. It's not. Yeah.
Because this one, you need that communication with friends in order to do like certain puzzles and certain things in the game, you know, so.
Especially because you're not tethered to your party, right? Like you can run over to the complete opposite side of the map while you're playing with someone else. Mm-hmm. And that means all of the enemies will be twice as hard or whatever the scale is, but you're by yourself. And so we've all had those co-op experiences where you're with somebody who's not on the same page and they just make it a nightmare for everyone involved. Mm-hmm. So it is good that you are at least forced to know who the people are that you're playing with. They may still do that to you, but you can at least text them and say, hey, what the hell.
Yeah. Anything else before we wrap it up? Or I think
I think people should be excited to get their hands on this. I think for me, you know, we've talked about Xbox as a whole. I jokingly said this during the preview event, but it's true. They need this. Xbox Game Studios / Bethesda needs this to be as good as it is. Anything less is going to be seen as a disappointment. So we'll obviously see what the final product is. This is just a limited preview. But, you know, when we talk about Game Pass and we talk about, you know, having it in the cloud and the PC and all that, these are the kind of games that Xbox needs more of, right? So I was pleasantly and happily surprised to see how much I enjoyed Redfall. And I think people that get their hands on it, they're going to enjoy it too.
Yeah, I feel the same. And anything else from you, Ree? Or you want to promote Twitter, podcast, anything else?
Yeah, I will definitely be posting my experience of the preview event on probably my TikTok, but definitely my Twitter. That's Rihanna Tweets Now, R-I-A-N-A Tweets Now. You'll hear me talk about this on What's Good Games along with Andrea. And yeah, play as Layla because she seems great.
Yeah, I can't wait.
She has great hair.
I can't wait to check out Remy.
Remy's definitely the one you're looking out for.
Yeah, I think, yeah. Because here's the thing. Like, I like to play with characters I could relate to. Maybe there's certain, you know, the dialogue, you know, Spanglish. I mean, I don't know. But probably I'll find out once the game comes out. But it is pretty cool to decide, like, hey, there's different characters from all, you know, different races. Like, it's cool.
We could have a whole squad of Remy's.
Yeah, we could do that.
Yeah.
Yeah, let's do it. Yeah, there you go. All right, everyone. Thank you for listening to this episode. Thanks to Xbox and also Bethesda for inviting us to this event. Please, for those who are listening to the podcast, post your thoughts. Let us know your thoughts about like our conversation about the game and everything. And let us know, are you planning to get the game? Let us know too on Discord or Twitter, or hit us up fanmail@gamertagradio.com. All right. Thanks to Rihanna. Thank you for joining us. And
thank
also
you.
Paris for driving a very long drive here to Los Angeles to be part of this event and recording.
I truly hate Los Angeles. I really do. Okay. The traffic is ridiculous. This is why I will never live here. Okay. I just want to point that out.
Anything else from that?
No, that's all that needs to be said. Okay. I don't like driving here.
There you go. All right, everyone. Until next time, thank you for listening. Gamertag Radio. We're out. Bye. We'll be right back.
listening to Gamertag Radio. Be sure to like us on Facebook and follow us on Twitter.